for many, many years, going way, way, way back into the Wayback Machine, if you remember the cartoon. Anyway, I won't go to that reference. The Church of God predicted that Europe would become a superpower. And all of Europe today is in a very important part of the world, with a very large part of the world's economy. If you take all of those nations and put them all together, then there's like 350, maybe 400 million people, depending on how you define Europe. So it's a very significant part of today's world, today's economy, today's politics, and it's a very important part of what happens with the world. But the predictions by the Church of God began shortly after much of Europe was decimated in World War II. Well, shortly after World War II, in the early 50s, there was the common market, which was foreseen by many of the leaders of Europe to be something necessary to help rebuild the economies of Central Europe and all of Europe. And then after that, it was kind of superseded by the European Economic Community, or the EEC, which became a reality in March of 1957. And on the horizon, it looked like there was a super duper colossus of a united European power was surely just over the horizon. And the church spoke about that often and wrote many, many articles about that. And very early on, as a matter of fact, in fact, you go back to the archives of the Plain Truth magazine, you can see that the church was talking about a super powerful Europe as early as 1953, and perhaps even earlier. I'm not talking about even the co-worker letters that Mr. Armstrong wrote, but going way, way, way back, before many of you were even born, the church was speaking about, upon the ash heap of Central Europe, was speaking about the fact that this was all going to rise again in a spectacular way. I'd like to read to you some of the early articles about what the church predicted would happen based on Bible prophecy, not just based on speculation. This is an article that was written in the Plain Truth magazine, or this is the introduction to an article written in the Plain Truth magazine in 1957. I was five. Well, actually, I wasn't yet five, because I'd be five later in the year, so I was just four. I didn't read it that time. Didn't even know about the Plain Truth magazine. Germany is a powerful nation again. Only a few years ago, the victorious Allies relaxed with a sigh of relief as the German high command signed surrender documents at Nuremberg, Germany. It was over. We had won. Germany had been conquered, whipped, devastated. Or had she? Today, the Western Allies are bound together with Germany in NATO ties, facing a common enemy to the east. The general blinding fear of communism has bound former enemies into mutual aid agreements to form a solid front, a stalwart bulwark against the ever-advancing hordes of Asiatic communists. But something is wrong. Germany, to the surprise of Western planners, is not acting like the peaceful, docile vassal they supposed she would. Instead of accepting her role as a dejected, beaten, and grateful and well-meaning ally of the Western powers, Germany has sown seeds of foreign industry, developed her own industry into an overwhelming machine, and is again throwing her weight around in the world. 1957. Well, that colossus of German domination never quite materialized in the way that was proposed in the rest of this article. It just didn't happen. But in 1963, this, just kind of cherry-picking a few articles here and there through the years, in an article entitled "The New Germany, Is It Dangerous?" April 1963, ominous developments here in Germany are becoming of deep concern, all caps, exclamation mark. But is there real cause for worry? Are the neo-Nazi slogans, the anti-Jewish outbursts, the torch-lit parades cause for alarm? you will be gravely concerned when you get the true picture of what's happening here in Germany and what will soon happen here. Here, once again, in Dusseldorf, Germany, visiting our new German offices, I am on the scene of one of the most startling revolutions of our time. You would be shocked if you could see with your own eyes the glittering, glamorous new Germany. You will be more shocked when you realize what is happening behind the scenes in Germany will soon affect you where you live. The new Germany is incredible to believe. It is incredible to believe that I'm in a city almost totally destroyed during World War II. In driving to our hotel with Mr. Frank Schnee, manager of our offices here, I was amazed all over again at the modern, progressive, new look of Dusseldorf. All over again, because this was one more of the many visits to these booming cities of the industrial Ruhr, the throbbing heart, and the awakening giant of the continent. That was a long time ago, 70 years ago. And then in September of 1964, just thought I'd read the intro to three articles. In an article entitled "The March for an Undivided Germany," the German problem is not dead. Germans are thinking more than ever of an undivided Reich and of an undivided Europe. Here from Germany is what is happening now. On the 17th of June, Germans celebrated a national holiday, a day dedicated to an undivided Germany. Now, for those of you who have been born after 1989, maybe a little bit of history is something that, you know, maybe you were taught it, maybe you weren't taught, but in 1989, Germany was united once again after being divided into East and West since 1961. So that is the emphasis of the article. So you might say that we were, as a people, as a church, really early to the game in predicting a colossal power in Europe. And that is still on the horizon. And you could say, well, we were a failure in predicting the resurrection of Europe, and you would be correct. But I would take the tack that the church was alert and aware of the potential because of Bible prophecy. So what are the important prophecies to be aware of despite all of this history in which a lot of these things that were predicted in a Plain Truth magazine haven't yet come to pass? What are the important prophecies of the future of Europe, and how should you react to them? What are the important things to keep in mind regarding the future of Europe? Because I do think it's important to stay aware, despite the fact that we were kind of early on the scene. I'll tell you one thing that it did for a lot of the people in the Church of God back in those eras, many of them now dead, quite frankly. It kept them in the game and helped them to be alert to the possibilities that would happen in their world. And as I said previously last week, all you have to do is look at Paul's writings, and he was the major writer of the New Testament books. In his books, which are prophetic in many cases, he thought that he was living in the last days, especially when you read what he was writing to the people in Thessalonica. He thought, and was it bad for him to be 2,000 years early to the scene? I don't think so. Because he encouraged a lot of people about the potential of what was going to happen in the world. And he kept people interested in the return of Jesus Christ. So through the years, depending on the decade, the Church of God identified certain individuals who were prominent on the scene who would become maybe the individual who would fulfill specific roles. There was one man, time that I came into the church, that was identified as the strong man of Europe. He was the premier, I think that's the title that they use, of Bavaria, and he was an up-and-coming politician on the scene, and you may remember his name if you're a student of European history, Franz Joseph Strauss, who is called the strong man of Bavaria. I guess I can say it now that the church even projected that he would fulfill the position one of them, which I will speak of today. He died in 1988, Franz Joseph Strauss, died at a very old age. There was an individual that Ellis LaRavia was a friend with and well-known, and we thought that maybe his family, because of ancient history, medieval history, and because of their ties to the Holy Roman Empire in the way back past, we thought that maybe this individual would have something to do with the reunited Europe. And he was one of the visionaries of the European Union. And so he was a guest on our campus. He spoke at our assemblies. And his name was Otto von Habsburg. And why did we associate him with the Holy Roman Empire of the future? Well, because he was a descendant of the Habsburg dynasty. He was one of the architects of European unity. He was very, very much interested in that. He is very much interested. He was a European. And Europe is totally different than the United States. But we always thought that there would be a similar union of a United States of Europe at some point in the past. And in some fashion or some form, that is very likely going to happen. Not as cohesive as the United States is, perhaps, or has been through its history, but still. Otto von Habsburg was a descendant from a line of kings. When the monarchy played an important role in European history, and speaking of the monarchy, we just had the death of one of the monarchs of Great Britain, of England, the Queen, the longest reigning monarch, I think, in history, reigned on the throne of England for longer, I think, than anybody else as a king or a queen in the history of mankind, certainly challenging the longevity of anyone else, I think. But Otto von Habsburg was an exiled ruler from the nation of Austria and Hungary before it became just Austria, and then they became separate powers. But his family was hunted down after World War I, and many of them were killed, and he was exiled from his own nation. But he was really an incredible person. Ellis knew him, spoke very highly of him, and as time went on, though, it just seemed that, you know, this guy would never, he just doesn't fit the picture of somebody that would, you know, fall, you know, back in the mid-80s when we thought that the beast of Europe would arise soon. He just didn't really fit the profile. But he did become a member of the European Parliament. But again, he lived in exile most of his life. He never returned to his homeland of Austria. He was exiled as a young person. Really an interesting person. He spoke a lot of languages. He spoke German, Hungarian, Croatian, English, Spanish, French, and Latin. Spoke Latin fluently. Spoke all these languages fluently. And he died in 2011. Well, with all of the dramatic events that have happened throughout Europe, it did seem for many points in history, going back in my lifetime, that there could be events that would bring Europe together, but they never came about. The Berlin Wall went up in 1961. That was a huge event. I remember even as a kid, I wasn't associated with the church at that time, but that was incredible. And then it came down in 1989 when, just shortly after the time when President Reagan encouraged President Gorbachev or Premier Gorbachev to bring down that wall, and that wall did come down. But the idea of a united and powerful Europe today seems more dead than alive, despite all of the progresses that have been made. And years ago, we used to call Britain the sick man of Europe. But through Margaret Thatcher, Britain revived for a while. But now when you look at Europe, it is in a very, very difficult state. I'm not sure that this will happen, but I don't know of the future of Europe going into the wintertime of all things, because they have put so much emphasis, wrongly so, on climate change and on thinking that green energy was the wave of the future, they have basically cut themselves off from vital oil and gas supplies from nearby Russia. And they did this through the war that occurred in the Ukraine, and it's potentially going to have devastating consequences for Europe this winter. I think many are predicting that there are going to be a lot of people that freeze to death in Europe this winter, because they do not have the natural gas, the oil supplies, except from the Middle East. They've cut themselves off from Russian supplies. I don't think the Ukraine is able to deliver natural gas in Europe to Europe, but there are going to be some very, very difficult times in Europe this winter. And that is very, very unfortunate. You've probably read some of the international news and seen that in Germany, people are going out into the forest to gather firewood. Well, when you have millions of people that don't have heating fuel and they're anticipating not having natural gas or heating oil in the wintertime, you can't just all of a sudden revert back to fossil fuels and wood without there being consequences. And so they've had to enact laws to where they restrict people from cutting down forests. I mean, it's that dire. Now, we don't have that situation here. We're in a lot better shape with a lot of our own energy and fuel supplies, even though they've tried to cut that off. You've heard about what they passed the law in California that by 2035 that you can't have an internal combustion engine any longer. And during the recent few weeks, if you have an electric car in California, they've told you you can't plug it in. Okay, wait a minute. This is kind of not making sense. By 2035, we're going to all have electric cars in California, but right now you can't plug in your electric car, so they want you to stay home, which is kind of insane. And they don't have enough power. They're going to rely on the green energy. So all of this is, I think a lot of people are coming to the idea that this green energy wave is a scam. And caused by the other scam, a lot of people think of climate change. 500 years ago, they were growing tomatoes in Greenland. They had a heat wave for a number of years. You know, the temperature goes up, it goes down, it gets hotter. It's generally done by the sun. It's not done by man-made global warming. But that's another topic for another time. We probably won't cover it because it's a touchy subject for some people at any rate. Well, through the years, there's been the fall of the Berlin Wall. There's been the charisma of individual religious leaders like John Paul II and other important events. We were early on the scene, and some people might say maybe far too early, but what are you going to do when you have some of the prophecies of the Bible staring you in the face? How are you going to react if you don't really think about what's happening in the world when you understand the meaning of these prophecies? So the church has been right about this one. It's been a little bit early to the party, so to speak, but that doesn't mean that the party isn't going to start at some point. Europe in prophecy is very important for this reason. It's one of five major, I would call them pillars of Bible prophecy. And when you understand those five pillars, you're really pretty well educated. You have a head start. Without all the technical jargon, you have a head start on understanding what is going to happen and why it's going to happen in the world. And Europe in prophecy is one of those pillars. The other ones, I think I've rehearsed them with you before, punishments in modern Israel and understanding who Israel is in the Bible, Jacob and Jacob's descendants. A rise of a very powerful church in Europe, which the Bible prophesies. The Middle East in prophecy and what's going to happen there, all of that is very important. And then finally, the proclamation of the gospel. If you understand that those things are going to happen in the future, and I tend to think that they'll kind of all come together at the same time, then you can understand what really is going to happen in the world. And those are the important areas, the five major important important areas, the United States, in no particular order, United States of America, and all the English-speaking peoples as well. That is Jacob, that is Israel. Understanding what's happening in Europe, understanding a powerful church in Europe, understanding events in the Middle East are mentioned in Bible prophecy, and then understanding the proclamation of the gospel. Five areas. It's just five little points that you really have to remember and be keyed in on. And sometimes we've been very early to the party on a lot of those, but that doesn't really diminish their importance, in my view. So let's move ahead to some of these prophecies. But just before I get to some of these important points, let's take a look at the world as we see it today. What the church was very good at in the past was kind of taking the news of the day and keeping people interested about it. I don't see any problem in that. We did at one time, at one kind of isolated time, not that I was there, I can't say we, I'm just using the ubiquitous we to generalize. We did set dates, and that was wrong. We didn't know any better, but I can understand why it happened. I can understand why the 70s, the mid-70s especially, would become a focal point of the church. But when that was over, we got over that. So we're not setting dates at this particular time. But when you take a look at what is happening today in the world, and especially in this post-COVID era, or this COVID era of world history, there are some important elements. Not that these are the main things, but I think you probably should be aware of what people are saying and how that might translate, how it might translate into the fulfillment of future Bible prophecies. Let me throw some acronyms out at you. We've got NWO. Anybody know what that means? NWO. New World Order. How about WEF? Anyone? Nate? World Economic Forum. How about UN? Everybody knows that. United Nations, right? How about the WHO? There you go. You're aware. I'm really happy. You guys are on top of things. Then along with that, you've got a lot of other groups that are influential with these particular groups. Now, will they fulfill Bible prophecy? No. I don't think so. It's a personal opinion. But are they having an effect on changing world policies at this very time? Oh, yeah, you bet, and you can prove it. So will they become the beast of Revelation? Very likely not. But are they influential, and are a lot of other people influential behind the scenes in helping shape the policies that have even guided your lives in the last 2.5 years? Yes, they have. And when you examine what you've been told to do, I think, not that I'm a prophet, I'm certainly not, I think that maybe you might recognize my zeal, my urgency, in asking you to critically examine, almost at the beginning of every year, the word of the experts. The word of the experts can be very dangerous. And on a very slight level, when somebody tells you that peanut butter is bad for you one year, remember that? Peanut butter's bad, coffee's bad. They even said coconut oil is bad. And this was years ago. Coconut oil was probably one of the worst cooking oils that you could ever ingest in your body. And now we find out it's probably one of the best. And it helps take cholesterol out of the body. And a lot of people cook exclusively with coconut oil. So that's why, in evaluating what people tell you to do individually, I kind of scoff at them. Not the people that comply, but I scoff at those who give mandates and tell you how you ought to order your lives, because when it comes to that, that is how the world will be ruled in the future, by mandates, not by free choice. And if there's anything all of the people and all of these acronyms are good at, it's telling other people how to live and how they should live. And that is what is coming. That is a fulfillment of Bible prophecy. Now, thankfully, there's been a lot of uprising amongst various peoples around the world, in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the United States, the English-speaking peoples, England. There's been a lot of rebellion against some of these mandates and some of these must-dos and some of these have-dos, and this is for your own good. What we found is that these denizens of the New World Order, the WEF, the UN, the World Health Organization, which wants every nation to sign on to allowing them to be the ones to tell everybody else when to shut down again. Do you realize how dangerous that can be? And do you realize how universally that is accepted in some ways? That is exacting control over populations. And when you speak about the future of Europe, that is its destiny. So it wouldn't surprise me to see a lot of the ideas that are adopted by these groups today to be used in the future. But let's go to Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7 and in verse 7. This helps describe some of what we look forward to in happening in Europe. Because Daniel is speaking in the previous chapters, chapter 2 and chapter 4, don't have time to go through those today, of world-ruling kingdoms, beginning with Babylon. And then from Babylon there was Persia, and then from Persia there was Greece, and then after that there was the colossus of the Roman Empire, which was dominant for many thousands of years on the world scene. And so in Daniel chapter 7 and in verse 7, Daniel's saying, "After this I saw in the night visions, behold, a fourth beast." This would be the Roman Empire that succeeded all the previous ones. "Dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, trampling the residue with its feet. It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns." Huh, these horns, that's interesting. Horns on this beast. And I was considering the horns, and there was another horn, a little one, coming up among them, among whom the three of the first horns were plucked out by the roots, and there in its horn were the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking pompous words. Now, these horns are interpreted in the Bible as something. What are they? Go to verse 24. Verse 23. "Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on the earth." Real kingdoms. Now, this is back in 500 years before Jesus would be born. Okay? "And a fourth kingdom on the earth, which shall be different from all the other kingdoms, and it shall devour the whole earth, trample it and break in pieces." This is what would happen at the time of the end. "And 10 horns are 10 kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the first ones and subdue 3 kings. He shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High." And we read about this elsewhere in prophecy. But it says this fourth kingdom would have 10 horns, and these 10 horns are symbols of world rulers and very often enemies of God. Now, in this sense, Daniel is writing from where? Babylon. Babylon was the first of the four world-ruling kingdoms, and Daniel was alive, and he saw it, and he knew the dictator of that kingdom, and he knew Nebuchadnezzar very, very well. And he explained dreams to Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2, which helped him to understand that his nation, his kingdom would become very, very powerful, and of course that pleased Nebuchadnezzar, I'm sure, to no end. But it was the first kingdom, actually even goes way back, as you realize, first kingdom that was established just after the flood. And all of these kingdoms that arise and have arisen since that time have been anti-God. They have basically risen in defiance of God. And the first kingdom that arose after the flood, mentioned in Genesis 11, with the Tower of Babel, was in direct competition with and basically thumbing putting the thumb in the eye of God, or trying to, because that's what they want to do, to supersede God. They didn't want God ruling over them. And since that time, all world-ruling kingdoms of this nature have been anti-God. And in this sense, as I've explained before, Babylon and Rome kind of had this tie-in. Babylon was the original kingdom, but all the rest have fallen in line and been along the lineage of Babylon. So Babylon and Rome are tied together. In Revelation chapter 13, this is where we trace the future of these kingdoms to the prophecy of John standing on the Isle of Patmos, looking out, I believe, to the north, to the Aegean Sea, to the located in the Mediterranean at any rate. And John says, then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea. A beast is already been explained as a king or a kingdom. So he's by Daniel. So he saw this beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his horns, 10 crowns, and on his heads, a head of blasphemy. Again, anti-God. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard, his feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. Then the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. This final beast that rises up, that John sees, he recognizes that Daniel spoke of these same animals, and it encompasses all of the attributes of speed and power and dominance as the first four ruling kingdoms, or the first three ruling kingdoms that acted upon the earth. And now, just a very brief history lesson about this. In verse 3, I saw one of the heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world marveled and followed after the beast. That wound was exacted in 476 AD with the last of these beasts, the Roman Empire, which would have 10 successive heads. Three were defeated. They were kind of part of the Roman Empire, the Vandals, Ostrogoths, and Heruli. But there would be a final resurrection of this. And this is what the church has always taught. Of this empire, which historians acknowledge is the Roman Empire, and which developed into what was called in Europe the Holy Roman Empire, and which Otto von Habsburg was named one of the successors of, the King of the Holy Roman Empire. That was actually one of his titles, because that's what his family had come from. They had come from the Habsburg dynasty of Europe. Now, Prime Minister Thatcher was against a combined Europe, and she was against a European Union that would include Great Britain. And the reason was because she says Europe has only ever been united in anarchy. And it appears as though the church has probably been very, very correct, although off by the timing, in that we have always seen that European union and dominance could never come about until there was a time of crisis which would force it to come about. Now, we don't know when that crisis will come, but there are certain elements that we have seen that I've mentioned that lend us to believe that it could happen within our lifetimes, and it is something to be concerned about. And for reasons which I'll disclose in just a little bit, something that the antenna really ought to be up and about in terms of what we have experienced and what we have lived through already, and what I believe is a very nominal prelude to what is called the Great Tribulation, and that Christ prophesied about in Matthew 24. Some of the things are potentially very scary. And am I trying to scare everybody? No. I'd love to give every sermon about the fulfillment of what was mentioned in the sermonette, all of us being a part of the bride of Christ and the world tomorrow. But at the same time, it's a dangerous thing to ignore these things, even though the church was a little bit early on some of these things. Because there just has to, in order for prophecy to be fulfilled, these things have to happen. I could, you know, I'll probably link in the sermon, when this goes online, I'll probably link the old beast chart, which my sister-in-law Bonnie has kind of reformatted for me. If I can figure out a way to put that link in so that it looks, so it looks right, because they've got a space where you can put these things in for the sermons that are posted online, but it basically turns it into kind of like a, almost not even a PDF file, but with no structure. So I'm not sure that it, I'll have to figure out a way to put that in, or say, look, just email me and I'll send you a revised beast chart, which is many, many years old, but I think is helpful in understanding all of the successive kingdoms down through history and all of these horns that are mentioned. But even if you don't understand that, here are the things that really are to be understood. Verse 3 says that after this wound was healed, down through history, this Roman Empire would marvel, and especially at the time of the end, would all follow this beast, this government. And not only that, they would worship it. So the state would be worshiped. Now, we're taught as Americans that we should not worship the state. There's some people in the United States that want to bring that kind of worship back to the state. So when you pledge allegiance to the state and you're not an independent person. So they worship, verse 4. They worship the dragon. That's what it eventually comes to. Who gave authority to the beast, and they worship the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Look at this powerful union of states and nations. Right now, you do not see that in Europe. You don't even see it remotely in any way, shape, or form. It does not exist. But coming is a time in which people will say, who's like, you know, this is the most powerful group of nations ever. Who could make war with this? Now, that's not true of Europe today. What will it take to get there? Probably chaos, probably economic turmoil, probably a lot of the things that some of the people who are part of these acronyms that I mentioned earlier have actually advocated for and wanted to have happen. I'm going to stay here, even though in my notes I've got me going to Revelation 17, and I might get there during this sermon message, but I think it's more important to stay in this chapter, because now you know, if you hadn't known already, you know that beast is a kingdom, and you know that horn is a representation of that kingdom, because Daniel said so. And of this particular, even an individual in verse 5, it says, he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and that is exactly what Daniel predicted in Daniel 7, that the Most High God would be blasphemed. And then going on in Daniel 7, we also read that the saints of the Most High God would be persecuted by this same entity. It's got to be the same thing. But he has authority to continue for 42 months or 3.5 years. So it'll be a short-lived little dynasty when it finally comes up, but it'll exert such power and it'll have such dominance that people will be worshiping it. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God. They're always anti-God. Toward his tabernacle and those who dwell in heaven. Towards all the angelic beings and towards the tabernacle of God, which is the building of God, which is the temple of God, which is the people of God, which is Zion. All of these are synonyms with one another. And it was granted to make war with the saints and overcome them. This is also mentioned in Revelation 12. Some are protected, some are not, as we see at the end of Revelation 12. And all who dwell in the earth will worship him. That's not happening now. That's not happening of any single individual. And God says their names are not written in the book of life. They've made a bad choice. They've made some really horrific choices. Now, there's another beast that rises up in verse 11. This shows a unification of church and state, the likes of which does not exist anywhere in the world right now. It is not there. So it takes Bible prophecy to help you to see that this will at one point become a reality on the world scene, because it does not appear to be the case now, because secularism is much higher in terms of value in Europe than is religion of any kind. There are, I think it was according to some polls, only about 40% of Roman Catholics in Europe consider themselves really adherents to the church or believers. So you can see there's going to be an incredible transformation if you believe in the future and believe in Bible prophecy. There's going to be an incredible transformation into going back to the church in Europe, where this beast will arise, because John is on the island of Patmos and he's looking north and he's looking out over the great sea and he is seeing right ahead of him this beast rise up. And it means something. And it's going to have world dominance. But there's another kind of governmental authority that comes up in verse 11. It's another beast. It's called another horn by Daniel, a little horn. But in verse 12, it says, he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast. You know, look to this particular symbol, this particular government is doing the work of God. And so there's this union of church and state, and we have never been wrong about that, and we have always talked about that throughout our church history. Hadn't materialized yet. That doesn't mean it's not going to happen, but in verse 13, it says that this individual is going to have some unique powers because he's going to perform great signs, so that he makes even fire come down from heaven in the sight of all men. And he deceives everybody on the earth. Now, I think during the time of COVID, there's been a fair amount of deception by evil men and influencers. Virtually everything they've told you is wrong. Everything they've told you to do is wrong. And yet, they exerted quite a bit of compliance over a major portion of the population of the earth. When it comes down to somebody having this kind of power, supernatural, imbued by the devil, I think their ability to deceive is going to be far greater than it ever has been. There's been kind of a unification in the world that has taken place through the time of COVID that never has happened before in the history of mankind, due to fast communication, due to cooperation between governments, due to having a singular message that goes out. But when the singular message is wrong, and when it hurts people, and when it nearly wrecks the economies of all the world, then it brings you to the point where you're breaking, and it doesn't take much for it to tip over. Our economies are very fragile because of the shutdowns of COVID, which was going to be 2 weeks to begin with to bend a curve. It's turned into over 2 years of shutting down, none of which really helped. For something that is dangerous, for something that now they know, there's another interesting thing. I even told people, and you know, we were talking about it in December in the old hall. I remember talking with people, and I had researched this, I'd done some of that, you know, and the line that they were giving at that time universally was what? COVID came from wet markets in Wuhan, where these bat viruses jumped onto human beings that ate unclean meats. I kind of bought into that at first. Then I realized they've been researching this stuff in the United States for years. Began in Chapel Hill in North Carolina. And the NIH and all of its associated governmental groups were the ones responsible for funding it. Now, why they would want to integrate bat viruses into something that would hurt human beings is like the craziest thing on earth. But then we know, and this is a fact, I can't link it for you right now, I mean, but you can easily research this. It's common knowledge now. I thought about it for a long time, but it's really common knowledge now They transferred it. Our government officials transferred it over to Chinese labs, one of them prominently in Wuhan. They worked on it, and whether it was accidentally released or whether it was deliberately done, it's not a conspiracy. It's a fact. So if they, my point is not in all of that. If they can do all of these things, there's almost no limitation if they have this kind of supernatural power that is being spoken of. So then we get into what happens at the end. You know, the mark of the beast and the number of the beast. But when you have that kind of power at your disposal, can you see how easy it is? Now, when we get to the point of we're talking about groups that will control people's incomes, and that's what they want to do. You know, one of the World Economic Forum mantras in, you will own nothing, but you're going to be happy about it because you'll get your stipend from the government. And then you've probably heard about the cashless society and digital currencies. It's already taking place in some parts of the year. And look, I don't have my credit cards with me, but how far-fetched is that? When you realize that, you know, most of the time, most of us don't carry much cash around in our pockets anyway. What do we have? We have a debit card. We have our credit cards. We pay for this and that. We pay online. A lot of, you know, sometimes you've still got, you know, some of you, and I do too, sometimes write out a check and send it. But so much of what we do today is digitized anyway. So when you're talking about the future, it's not really hard to have a, you don't need a great imagination to think that they could digitize the currency and then take all the cash out of the banks and say, you know, that what you had in there, we're going to give you like 50% of it, and then you're going to have your own particular allowance every month. I mean, that's not very hard to imagine, but they do this in China, by the way, right now. It's already active in China, and they have what they call your credit scores, which are affected by your behavior. You think I'm making this up? This takes place in China right now. They have your scores, and if you're a good little boy or girl or citizen of the state, then you get 100% of what's available in your account. But if you speak out against the church, or the state rather, if you speak out against the state, that goes against you, and you may have only the purchasing power of 50% or 40%. I don't know if you know that these things are taking place, but now let's get back into the Bible where it says that in verse 15, in chapter 13 of Revelation, he was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that is, this powerful governmental union, and should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. Well, that's pretty dire, you know. We don't want to be killed. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand and on their foreheads. And what is that? The mark of the beast. Is it digital? Is it whatever? It may include that. But basically, there's going to be a religious revival that is going to take place. And compulsory religion will be exercised. Sunday will be the day of worship, and if you don't want that as your day of worship, then you're not receiving the mark of the beast. But if you really want to do what the beast tells you to do, and if you really want to have the ability to have access to all of that which is in your digital currency folder, you're going to comply. Because it goes on to say that no one may buy or sell except one has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. People get caught up about the number of the beast, the 666 thing. It reminds me of a few years ago I was talking with at the feast with Mr. Walden and my son James, and I think there had been a new pope or something there, and I kind of dissected his name and, you know, said this stands for this and this number and everything. And I said, yeah, it's, that guy's the beast. He's 666. He's got the number of the beast, the Pope. He's the false prophet. So did I have you convinced at all for a little while? Maybe, I mean, a little bit, yeah. So anyway, but sometimes people get so caught up on that number of a beast, they forget all this other thing that is life-changing that is taking place. So those things are kind of reality in some points of the world now where people's behavior can actually be coerced. And we've seen it in other ways through mandates and determinations. You want to have a job, you're going to have to do this. If you go to work, you're going to have to do this and this and this. These things happen. It shows the power of the state. But, you know, notice 2 Thessalonians. 2 Thessalonians, notice this. When you read this, it is quite chilling. Because now we've come this far, and Europe is still on the horizon, not unified or anything else. And we may have years before any of this begins to happen. But the one thing you can be sure of is, number one, there is going to be some need for Europe to come together. And what combination of states, I cannot predict to you. We don't know. Number two, there will be a religious revival as a, probably a matter of necessity, and this person will arise. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. The one that is mentioned is the little horn in Daniel, and also the other beast or government that arises in Revelation. Paul said in verse 3, 2 Thessalonians 2, let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless a falling away comes first, and the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. What does it mean? He's going to rise from the true church of God? No. But other prophecies like Matthew 24 show that the beast will move to the Middle East, move his headquarters. This powerful religious person will probably, at some point in the future, it'd be pure speculation to say exactly how it will happen. But Daniel also says in chapter 11 that daily sacrifices will be taken away, and there's a lot of other prophecies that corroborate this. But it appears as though these unified state and church governments will move everything to Jerusalem. And we'll be there. Paul goes on to say in verse 7, the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only let he who restrains will do so until he is taken away. And when the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth. And that's mentioned in Revelation 19 at the end of the chapter, where the beast and the false prophet are captured and thrown into the lake of fire. The coming of the lawless one, who according to the working of Satan with all power, signs and lying wonders, with all unrighteous deception among all those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. They're deceived. They're co-opted. They're mandated to obey by all of these groups and individuals that will exist at that particular time. It does appear that these will be 10 states that will unify at the time of the end and come about. The prophecies we've read show that commerce and economy are going to be controlled by the state, the government, the church. And we've seen some of these things even make their appearance on the world scene today. Digital currencies, which I've mentioned. Credit scores. Not credit scores like the normal credit score from, what are the range, from 300 to 850. But the credit scores in which you are tracked, in which you are given the ability to do commerce. Those things are a part of the advocacy of some of the groups that kind of operate behind the scenes. They're non-elected. They're kind of groups that have kind of just appointed themselves over the affairs of mankind. Turn to Daniel 11. Turn to Daniel 11, and we'll begin in verse 36, because this covers a very, very wide-ranging part of Bible prophecy. Daniel 11 and verse 36. This took place several hundred years after. This was prophecy that Daniel was writing about and that was given a prophecy of what would happen after his lifetime, shortly after his lifetime. And it has a dual application, and the application of these prophecies in Daniel 11 become more and more end time prophecy as you move further on down through the verses. But then the king will do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished, for what has been determined shall be done. Now, this first fulfillment of this prophecy was done during the time of the Maccabees by a Greek ruler, Antiochus Epiphanes. In verse 37, it says, he shall regard neither the God of his fathers nor the desire of women, nor regard any God, for he shall exalt himself above them all. But in their place he shall honor a God of fortresses, a God which his fathers did not know. He shall honor with gold and silver and with precious stones and precious things. Then he shall act against the strongest fortress with a foreign god, which he shall acknowledge and advance its glory, and it shall cause them to rule over many and divide the land for gain. All of that took place during the time of the Maccabees in 168 BC. Beginning in verse 40, it moves to a future time, the time of the end. At the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him. We don't know who that is yet. South, could it be Egypt? Could it be a conglomeration of powers, of Arab powers and Muslim powers? We don't know. But there will be some attack that takes place. And we can see that those things have been done through history, certainly through the Crusades. And, you know, even in modern times with, you know, you've got almost a billion people of the Arab nations, they're going to exert some power. Exactly how that comes about, we don't know, but the king of the north, which we believe to be this united group of European powers, shall come at him with a whirlwind, you know, with chariots, they'll invade the area of the Middle East. And as it says in 2 Thessalonians, he shall also enter the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape from his hand, Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Moab. So Daniel speaks about this prophecy about what will happen even after Europe comes about. We know this. The power of this beast and this unholy alliance of church and state is going to be destroyed at Jesus Christ's return. The consistent theme of every prophecy, or most of the prophecies of Daniel, Revelation, and Thessalonians in the gospel accounts, are the return of Christ to strike down these kingdoms. Daniel 2:44, at the culmination of Daniel 2, shows that Jesus Christ comes as a stone and destroys the entire system known as Babylon. Revelation chapter 19 shows the return of Jesus Christ in a triumphant way to destroy all of these kingdoms which have exercised their power, their dominion, their mandates, their ungodly principles upon the entire world. In Revelation 19 and verse 19, it says, I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him who sat on the horse and against his army. Topic we'll cover in Bible study today as well. Then the beast was captured, and with him the false prophet who worked signs in his presence, by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two were cast alive into the lake of fire, burning with brimstone. And the rest were killed with a sword which proceeded from the mouth of him who sat on the horse, and all the birds were filled with their flesh. Going to be an incredible slaughter at that time. Is it far off? It may be afar off. It's a lot closer than it was when we began talking about these things 70, 80, even Mr. Armstrong thought about them and wrote about them upwards of 90 years ago. Today, there is quiet in Europe. This is a group of nations that are very, very sophisticated, brilliant. They're filled with the history of man's Western civilization. And they have also been the site of some of the worst conflicts in the history of man. On the surface, what Europe is going to become is really not apparent by the current situation. The rise of the beast and the false church that will dominate world events at the time of the end is known only to you and a few others, known only to those who understand Bible prophecy. And yeah, we were very, very early to the party many years ago. I'm kind of glad that I've known about these things for a long time, even, and I'm glad that they haven't been fulfilled yet, you know, to be honest with you, because living in this day and age as a parent and as a grandparent and having friends and relatives that could be subjected to all of this, it's a burden to have this knowledge. It's a burden to understand that the seeds are already there in which all of this could eventually blossom and flourish. And to know that we could view it ourselves happen and in some ways be subject to some of the forcible problems that are going to be caused by this kind of dictatorship and this kind of domination is burdensome information and knowledge. Yeah, enjoy life while you can. One might ask, since we were so wrong and so early to the party many years ago, why should we study and focus on this aspect of Bible prophecy? Are you kidding? Because it's there. Because Christ told us to watch and pray, and you know that has to do with our spiritual condition, but also it's directed to the fact that we need to be aware of what is going on in the world today. So study prophecy, study what's going to happen, and look forward to the future when, thankfully, Jesus Christ is going to abolish and conquer all of this and set up his kingdom on this earth.